originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I am joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I would like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219 XM 201, and to those of you tuning into our website at www.horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. Please, if you are able to help, visit their website at www.pdjf.org. So our guest tonight came from humble beginnings in Panama, immediately found success once arriving in the U.S., and has since gone on to ride the likes of Proud Spell, Eight Bells, Kodiak Cowboy, Summer Soiree, Havre de Grace, Frisian Fire, just to name a few. He's winning at a remarkable 24% win clip at the current Keeneland meet, with 1,103 career wins and counting, and over $37 million in earnings. It is a pleasure to introduce jockey Gabriel Saez. Gabriel, welcome to the show.
Well, hello, everyone. Christina, thanks for the opportunity. I really appreciate it, and glad to be here. Thank you very much.
It's so great to have you here, Gabriel. We were just talking when you walked in here to the studio, which it's a pleasure to have you here in person.
I
haven't seen you, I don't think, since Delaware Park.
That's been a while, right?
Yeah, back in my riding days. That was a long time ago. But love to see your success you're having here at Keeneland. And we were also talking earlier about such a premier meet. It has to feel so good for you to be doing so well at Keeneland.
I know. Thank God, man, everything's going well and coming back to the place was, that I used to be, you know. And I'm just glad I'm doing so well here. And like I said, from the beginning, to start a Keeneland meet the way I did, and I mean, it's I'm really grateful to start it that way. And like I said, just looking forward for a pretty good summer.
Who are the main outfits you're riding for now here at Keeneland?
Well, basically, I ride on a little bit for everyone, you know. And I'm glad Larry has given me the opportunity back to get back in those good horses that he has, you know. And it, I just got to go day by day, get working hard, you know, keep doing what I'm doing, and then hopefully everything worked out for the best.
So, Gabriel, describe a typical day to us in your life at Keeneland. You go out and work horses, go meet with the trainers. What do you do?
Oh, yeah, it's an everyday deal. Just got to get out there and do what you do best and try to do the best you can. You know, get out there in the mornings and, you know, go barn to barn. You know, you rode before. It's just, you know, a lot of discipline and you know, and when you get out there at the track and show what you can do. On my part, when I get out there, I try to do the best I can. You know, try to get along with every single horse. You know, because there has to be a connection between a horse and a jockey. It's just not you're going to go out there and, oh, I'm going to be a jockey and I'm going to be good at it. But, you know, you have to know what you're doing. You know, takes a lot to learn. It's not easy. But, you know, the harder you work and the more opportunities you get, the better you will do.
How do you develop that connection with a horse? Do you like to have the opportunity to get on a horse in the morning prior to the race, or You feel them out in the post parade. How do you do that?
You know, that'd be best, you know, to get a filter before you get out there and racing, you know. But the thing that I do is when I get on a horse, I just try to sit on it and make the horse feel comfortable. You know, because horses can sense, you know, if you're afraid or you're scared of them. You know, it's just gotta, you know. I've been doing it for so long that it's kind of hard to explain how easy I do it. You know, I just jump in and I'm going to sit on a horse like I'm sitting in this chair right now. Just as comfortable as can be. And, you know, let a horse know that you are the one in charge. And you know, and go hard for it.
I read an interview, Gabriel, that Larry Jones was quoted as saying, "What a natural you were on a horse," and how some people have to really try hard to get along with a horse and to get run out of horse, but you don't, according to Larry Jones. Would you agree with that? Does it come easy for you, you feel like?
It does. It's just, you know, like I said, I've been doing it for so long, and the more I do it, the easier it gets for me. You know, it all depends, you know, what kind of horse you're on, too. Because, you know, some horse can do anything that you don't want them to do, and you got to correct it, and it's just, you know, for me, it's just so easy. That is, I don't have a word to explain it to you. I just do it. It comes to me just so natural. Thank God, you know, I had it done, and I thank God every day for it. And, you know, that's what I do, and I try to do best.
Do you find you get along with a particular kind of horse better? For example, a nervous filly or a headstrong colt, or... You get along with everyone.
You have to get along with everyone, you know.
Yeah,
you know. A particular filly, you know, some fillies act, you know, they want to be, you know, female.
Hey, now, wait a minute.
you know, just trying to, you know, calm them down the best you can, you know, get along and you know, pet and talk to them because they're listening, you know, they like pets, you know. And like us, they work every day with them. I mean, to me, horse... It's like a part of family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could be off for a while, but you, I will mess up after a few days. It's, you know, that's how much I love it and how much I like to do what I do. It's, you know, it's decide to do something else. I don't know what to do. I don't know what I'm going to do, you know, because that's the only thing I know how to do, you know, just ride horses.
Well, you're good at it, Gabriel.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Talking about how natural it comes to you, would you credit that to your beginnings as a young boy? You started off getting on horses pretty early, right?
Pretty early, you know. And thanks Larry every day for the opportunity and all the trainers and owners, because, you know, I came to this country where I not even say hello in English.
Wow.
Not even a word, you know. So I had done come a long way, I could say that. And it, you know, I just thankful that everything's falling back in place and it's coming along for me again.
Tell us what it was like for you growing up as a kid in Panama.
Oh, good old days. Yeah, back home, you know, I grew up in about 300 acre farm.
Oh, wow.
So I was surrounded by horses and, you know, animals since the beginning of my life. So, you know, I've been riding horses even before I was born, because my, you know, mom was pregnant and she was, you know, roping cattle too when she was like 5-6 months pregnant, you know. And so I could say this is my blood. That's all my blood. And, you know, growing up back home when so much land and so much field, so much, you know, stuff to do, it was fun. I miss it every day, you know. But, you know, I'm glad to be here in the United States and doing what I do and doing what I do the most, you know. So, you know, thank you for the opportunity, everyone.
I read another article that you grew up pretty much in the jungle. You had coconut leaves as your roof of your house.
On the roof of my house, right? Yeah.
It's true.
It's true. Wow. You know, I'm not going to deny where I come from. You know, it's another world. You know, it's just, you know, you grow up around animals and fields and it's a jungle, you know. and it's so much fun out there, you know. It's you know, to me, it's just, it's home. And you know, and I just, you know, glad to be here, like I say, you know, and I will come back, you know, yeah, for sure. You know.
So would you, you're at the farm, the 300-acre farm, so would you just jump on the horses at the farm and run around?
And run around. I used to own my own horse, you know. I used to have a horse, a lot of horses. I used to own my own, my little pony. And that was the one that I learned to ride, you know. I ride hand every day. I used to go get it on the fields and, you know, get in and bring it back, you know, grow them up and tack them up and ride them, you know. And, you know, go get the cows, you know, get the cows, you know, ready, bring it up to the house and, you know, get out there and do something else, go out of there and fix this fence. And, you know, growing up on Grandpa, and it was just a lot of work growing up and, you know, and it was a lot to do. I mean, so much to do out there that it's just, you know, it's really, it's awesome.
So your childhood sounds like it was pretty much working all the time.
Yeah, it was working every day. You know, working every day. You know, I used to go to school too, you know, and you know, days off, you know, time off, you know, get do this, you know. I got to the other farm, an hour away, and a horse, you know, through the trails. You know, I remember we used to do this. We used to take the cattle from one farm to the other. You know, I used to be the leader, and my little horse calling the cattle when I pound of salt, and all the cattle about, you know, 50, 60, 80, 100 heads of the cattle following us, and everybody's chasing them back there, and then they're following me because I got the salt in my hand. And I'm just kind of running around, and it was, you know, it was something that we used to do. It was that we used to do for a living too, you know, because, you know, my grandpa was a farmer, and that's what he used to do for us to survive, you know. Plus, you know, we used to own the horses. And I have an uncle that rides in Singapore too. My grandfather's youngest son. He rides on there. And I remember I used to come to the cities and, you know, vacation from school. I used to go to the city and go to the racetrack. And I'm like, man, I thought it was so cool. And I was like, man, I really want to do that when I grow up. And I started from my own youngin' age. Like back home, I used to build my own saddles and try to ride like a jockey. You know, I hurt myself sometimes, so, you know, tried to do it. Or, you know, what time I came to the jockey school, I already have a idea, what you know, how to do it. So I spent my 2 years in jockey school after I left the jungle, like you said, you know. And then and I went to jockey school for 2 years, and I started riding back home, and you know, now I'm here again. It's been a long story, man. You know, see, we sit here and talk about it. We go all day,
yeah.
You know, so it was so much fun growing up. I just, you know, and I thank that because, you know, for that, look where I'm at right now, mm-hmm. You know, for that little things every day, you know, go do this, you know, ride this horse there and go get this, go to the store. You know, used to ride your horse to the store and it was, you know, it's fun. And so
that made you who you are today. And how old were you when you went to jockey school?
I was 16 years old.
16 years old.
I was 16 years old when I went to jockey school. And by the time I was 18, I already had my jockey license. You know, and it'll, you know, turning to be 18, you know, because you spent 2 years in jockey school. The first years, the style from the bottom up, like, you know, doing a stall, working a horse, you know, ride a horse around the chair row, like from the bottom up. And then you start doing that the first year. By the second year, you know, you get opportunity to go to the track, you know, go to the gate. Depends how good you're doing. So depends how good you're doing. Is you, you know, the teachers think that you still need a little bit more time, they will give you a little bit more time. So, you know, they want to make sure that everyone from that jack school, you know, come to be good or they want to know that you know, they want to know that you know what you're doing, you know. So it's really hard, you know, and that first year, you know, you get there without you know, knowing anybody, and you have to, like, you know, hustle yourself to, you know, to get opportunity. And the moment you get connected with the people and they know that you can do it and that you're willing to do it, that's more, the more hope that you get. And it, and you know, you gotta stay there those 2 years and do your thing, you know, do what you do good. And
so many great jockeys have come from Panama. Lafitte Pincai Jr., of course, I had him on the show a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. He was unbelievable. Just to spend an hour with him was amazing. Jorge Velasquez, I mean, I could go on and on and on. Why do you think that is? Is it because of the jockey school or
what? It's tough. I mean, it's tough. You gotta earn your stuff out there. Yeah, man. And be willing to do it, you know, be willing to success, to, you know, to get to the next level, to, you know, because every jockey's dream out there is, you know, come and get your jockey license and you know, get opportunities in different countries. And, you know, like a lot of us come out here, a lot of them, they go to Saudi, you know, my uncles in Singapore, they go, you know, they go to different, they depends. You know, whatever you get the opportunity, you know. And I got the opportunity to come here. And I love it. I'm glad. You know, I'm glad. And I love the United States and I love this country. And I'm glad I'm here. And
What is the difference between riding here and riding in Panama? Is the money a lot better
more
here?
More opportunities.
Yeah.
It's more opportunities. You know, more. It's more opportunity for you to success, to you know, like you were just talking about Lafitte. Look what he accomplished. We go, you know, Georgie, you know, Solis, all these guys that have been from the St. Jackie school I was with, you know, and look how much they have done for each other, you know, and you look stuff like that, you know. Like when I was in Jackie school, I used to, you know, watch Simulcats and, you know, watch Santa Anita and, you know, New York, and then I was like, look at these guys, man. I remember I used to Saratoga. I was like, my last year in Jackie school, I used to, man, I want to go to Saratoga. I want to ride there. And then, you know, I went to Alabama and Saratoga. So, you know, little things like that, you know, that get you motivated and get you going, you know. And it's just super awesome. I just love my career.
How many were in your class in jockey school and any other names we would be familiar with?
Oh, it was a whole bunch when we first started. We were about 25 of us and only like 10 come out.
Wow.
That's how tough it is.
No kidding.
That's how tough it is. You gotta like really be into it. And it's, you know, it's, you like can do it. I mean, just might as well don't try, you know? And some of them got out. They got out, and then some quit, and some they can't make because they wait. And, you know, so like I say, about 10 of us, that's the only way they come out of 25.
Small group.
You know, and up here, for my promotion, it's only like two or three of us. You know, it's Jordan Tunyon that is in Penn National. Mm-hmm. And it, Antonio Lopez that's in Charlestown, and it's me.
Wow.
You know, and the rest, I don't know what's going on with the rest. You know, I haven't been back since I basically got here. Spent almost 4 years. So, you know, I haven't, you know, rode back there since, you know, since I come out, since Jackie school. And it's not like I say I never come back, but I will. You never know, you know. I love to go back and put a show on then.
Show them what you're made of.
Yeah, all right.
Do you see your family at all?
Yeah, I talk to my every day. You know, family back there, you know. So they're good.
Everybody. Do they come here to watch you ride?
No, they haven't come yet. They're, you know, I got a small brothers. So, you know, she will.
One of these days.
One of these days.
Jockey Gabriel Saez joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Gabriel, you found success pretty much immediately after you graduated from jockey school. You started riding there in Panama, did very well. And what was it that brought you here to the U.S.?
Like I told you before, you know, the more opportunities you get out here, you know, the opportunity to ride better horses, you know. And you know, it's just, it's so much of, you know, horse racing in this country. This is so amazing, you know, like especially here in Lexington and Kentucky, the Kentucky area. I mean, it's so many horses out here that the only thing you gotta do is just work hard, be dedicated, and ride and ride good and ride, you know. I mean, it's like I said, it's not easy. You gotta get out there and look for it, you know, every day, 24/7, 365. You gotta work and you gotta, you know, prove that you can do it. And
who brought you here?
I mean, helped me to come to this country was Cornelio Velasquez and my old agent, Ruben Munoz. He actually got Ricardo Santana over there in Arkansas right now, and they're doing really good for themselves. And that's good. And congratulate them. And it was Ruben and Cornelio and plus my uncle, the one that I told you that rides in Singapore, you know, mm-hmm. with the connection with Cornelio, the family, Ruben. And so Ruben and then ended up bringing him out here. And so I was very nice back then.
Were you nervous leaving your home country, leaving your family? You were young. Were you nervous about coming to the States? You didn't speak English.
No, to be honest with you, I was not. I was ready to come. I was ready to, you know, to explore, to be out here. I was ready to, you know, to see what was next. And then I came to Florida, you know, started, you know, getting on horses for a few months. And then that's when I ended up going to Delaware. And I started my campaign over there since I bought the apprentice rider. And I did really well the first year. And everything went on from there, you know. I ended up meeting up with Larry, you know, a few years later, I was, you know, riding the Oaks, riding the Derby, you're riding these type of races that, you know, that's the one that you want to be riding, you know. And like I said, I'm working hard to be back on it, and I will. I'm going to try.
You will. What did your family say when you announced to them, hey, I'm leaving, I'm going to the States?
All the time I remember they tell me, good luck, behave. And do what you do best. You know, they're like I was like I told you, you know, I came to Jackie school and that we were expecting that. So they were expecting that, like, man, he's gonna go, man. You know?
And once you arrived here and you'd ridden races in Panama and did very well, what's the difference between riding in Panama, riding in the US? Are the riders different? Do they ride different riding styles? What was different about it?
Better horses, you know, and I mean, the riders, believe me, the riders that ride out there, they're really good. You know, they got some vets that are, I mean, they still ride from, you know, back in the goose day that, I mean, they can ride. I mean, when you come out of jacket school, they get after you. Make sure you're doing it right. You got to make sure you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. And then, I mean, it's a great colony of riders back home. It's just, no, the riders is, you know, it's just the better opportunity, like I told you, you know, it's just, you know, the opportunity to success and to find the, you know, the opportunity to be better, you know.
Is the work in the morning similar back in Panama? Do you have an agent? Do you work horses? How does that work?
Yeah, you do. You do have an agent back home. You have agents and you work every day, like here. The only thing different back home is that every single groom, we have like a little paddock for the morning. So every groom tucks their horses, getting them ready, and they bring it up to the little paddock right in the entrance of the track. So all the riders, so, you know, line up and then waiting. And, you know, they have an agent, you know, talking to trainers, but the horses will come up to you. You know, has to go and bring it back to the barn. So they bring it up to you, you get on and you know, you do what you're supposed to do. You go working or you go, you know, gallop or whatever. And and you come off the track and you jump off of that one and you get off on another one. So it's kind of easier, you know, because they bring the horse to you in the morning. You don't waste as much time. Bring horses back to the barn, you know. And it's not like it's hard, but yeah. I like to, you know, bring my horse. And I like the fact that Keeneland has some barns like way down there and you get to ride your horse. You get to know your horse better up here than what you do down there. You know, you ride your horses to the horse path, you know, you you get to pet and you get to talk to them. And I like that about here, you know. And, well, it's a lot easier back then. You waste, you know, less time than what you do here.
I'm sure back there, though, you could get on a number of more horses in the morning. How many would you typically get on in a morning back in Panama?
Back home? It was quite a few because I was just starting when I was riding. It was like, you know, their pants. You know, how many has to get on that morning? You know, I think the most that I got in one day was about 12 in one morning, you know. But basically, like Fridays and Saturday was working days. So that was the days they were really busy. So it was, you know, their pants, how many you has to get on. It's like here, you know. But the only difference is they bring the horse to you. You know, and you only get to ride around the track and come back again. And you know, kind of get it done quick. So, you know. But I like this style better than what back there, you know. Like I said, you get to ride your horse and get to know him better. So
then when you arrived here, you mentioned you didn't speak English. So what did you do to learn?
Yeah, English. I guess it was easy for me. You know, when I first came, I just kind of, you know, got me a book and I wasn't afraid to speak it. I wasn't afraid to ask, hey, listen, how do you pronounce this? How do you say this? What does this mean? You know, stuff like that. I wasn't afraid to ask, and I was, you know, it was easy for me. By the second year, I was ready, you know, get into it a little bit. And you know, it's not like I went to school and I didn't learn it. I just learned and, you know.
It just came to you.
Came to me.
Well, folks, we will continue our visit with jockey Gabriel Saez after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm John Velasquez.
And I'm Julian Lepau. Every jockey knows and accepts the risk of a sport every time they get a leg up on the horse.
Although catastrophic on-track accidents are rare, when they do happen, the lives of the jockeys and their family change forever.
It's up to all of us in racing to support these men and women.
That's why we support the Permanent Disabled Jockey Fund. Since its founding in 2006, the PDJF has disbursed over $8 million to over 75 permanently disabled jockeys.
Over 90 cents out of every dollar donated goes directly to these brave men and women.
They use their monthly stipend to pay bills, hire caretakers, and many other things that make living with a permanent disability just a bit easier.
This is Mike Pena of HRRN. Did you know that the PDJF has no permanent guaranteed funding mechanism and relies entirely on donations from people like you? Please visit the PDJF website at pdjf.org to learn how you can help.
Hi, I'm Ron Turcott. I support the PDJF. I hope you will too, and I thank you.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. Congratulations to John Velasquez as he won his 50th career Keeneland Stakes race on Saturday by winning the Grade 1 Jenny Wiley with Sister Charlie. Irad Ortiz Jr. won the Plenty of Grace Stakes at Aqueduct aboard Uni and tied for the leading rider in wins in North America. Ortiz finished the week winning 34% and coming in the money on 56% of his mounts from 11 wins, 4 seconds, and 3 third-place finishes. Sammy Camacho had a great week at Tampa Bay as he tied Irad Ortiz Jr. for the most wins in North America. Camacho finished the week winning 42% and coming in the money on 54% of his mounts from 11 wins, 2 seconds, and 1 third place finish. Finally, the Foundation Detox Jockey of the Week, Ricardo Santana Jr., had an exceptional closing week at Oakland. He won 3 stakes races, led the national weekly standings by total and stakes earnings, won the 2018 meet riding title at Oakland, and hit a personal career milestone of 1,000 victories. On Friday, Santana piloted home on Bridled Mo to upset the Grade 1 Apple Blossom, and on Saturday, he won the Grade 3 Count Fleet Sprint aboard Whitmore. Santana won 28% of his mounts and came in the money on 58% from 10 wins, 6 seconds, and 5 third-place finishes. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit jockeytalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at Jockey Talk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
As they come to the top of the lane, in Kentucky Oaks, number 134, they turn for home. B. Sharp Sonata confronted by Proud Spell on the outside. B. Sharp Sonata digs in gamely. Proud Spell pushing on by, and she's taking the lead now. Country Star far outside, and on the inside is Little Bell in deep stretch, but it's Proud Spell, and she's tipped away from the field impressively. Proud Spell drawing away to romp home in Kentucky Oaks, number 134 by 5. Little Bell ran second, Pure Clan third. It's tight for fourth. The time of the board was 150 flat.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by jockey Gabriel Saez. Gabriel, we just heard the replay of your Kentucky Oaks victory aboard Proud Spell, and watching your face right now, you're smiling listening to that clip there.
All right.
What memories does that all bring back?
I just kind of in the race right now, you know. Good old days. Yeah, that was so awesome. You know, I was just a kid by then, you know.
How old were you?
I was like 19.
Wow.
Yeah, I was just a little on your own buck, you know, trying to success. Well, I was good. I was good. Man, what I tell you, I was just, you know, one of my best experiences, you know. I rode and I see that many people out there. I was like, wow, what's going on here, you know? And it was like, you know, I just, all, you know, really thankful. You know, that race is where it was kind of the beginning of my career back then, you know. And Proxpair was just all super awesome. Little tiny filly with a big heart. She used to get it. She used to be super, you know, super nice, and she used to do everything so right, you know. And, you know, Larry did a pretty good job with her. And, you know, I thank him every day, like I told you earlier, you know, and Burton Johnson, all the connections for the opportunity.
What was she like to ride? Was she easy? Did she want to tug at the bit? What was she like?
It was kind of a type of horse, you know. She wasn't really that big, you know. She was a little, you know, I could have said tiny, but, you know, compared to a male horse, she was, you know, pretty decent filly. And then, you know, she was kind of sharp and broken, you know, right on top, right off the back, you know. And I just kind of graduate and settle in the position that I wanted to be. And when we hit that second turn, you know, like, the moment I asked her, and she gave me everything she have. That was super nice, you know. And you know, we turned for home. She just kind of pinned that, you know, that head down a little bit. And I remember when I won the Alabama, I was so excited when she, you know, just kind of dig into that head and just, you know, go out there 100 miles an hour. So that was awesome, you know. She was a really, really a little filly with a big heart.
She wanted to win.
She wanted to win, to be honest with you. Yeah, she was pretty special.
In the Kentucky Oaks, at what point in the race did you know you had it won?
Turning for home, and, you know, sitting about third, you know, second, third of the lead, and I'm still loaded with horse. And I was like, well, I think we got a pretty good shot to get out there. You know, and like when I said, you know, when I asked her to, you know, to kick that gear, she just kind of, you know, went on and got the job done. You know, a good horse make a jockey. So
It had to be an awesome feeling once you crossed the wire in front.
I know. It was, you know, it was one of those moments, you know, that, you know, till you wait for a long time and it finally comes and, you know, you get goosebumps and you get all these kind of feelings and, you know, plus the people, you know, hollering, screaming. You know, it's something special, pretty fun, you know. And everyone that had one big races like that, like Oaks or Derby, you know, it's they know what I'm talking about.
Of course, Proud Spell trained by Larry Jones, who has had so many great horses that you've had the opportunity to ride. Tell us how you first got the opportunity to ride for Larry.
Well, Larry, you mean like a saga with Larry when I was in Delaware. And just working one morning, you know, we went to see him. You know, we went to, you know, to lose ourselves, you know. And I remember Ruben, let's go see the cowboy. I'm like, yeah, for sure, let's go see the cowboy. And they're like, and I remember he asked Ruben, this boy know how to speak English? I don't think so. You know, he don't know how to, you know, he's learning. But he can ride, you know. You know, and I remember he gave me the call of Chateau Lafitte. That was the name of very first ride for Larry. It was in the grass. I remember it was like 30-1. My first, very first ride for Larry. We ended up winning the race 30-1 in the turf.
Wow.
And then I worked for Chateau Lafitte. I never forgot that name. And it, yeah, and everything was on for that on. And I remember that morning, the day of the race, he told me, you, one move, sit and go. Sit and go. I remember that's exactly what he told me. And I'm like, okay, I got it. And you know, that's what I did. I let the filly break and, you know, when I ran there and when we turned for home, I squeezed her around and asked him for whatever she got and we ended up winning the race and that's immediately we started a connection with Larry, man. He's like, that boy can ride, you know? And then we, you know, he started using me a little bit more, you know? And that's how we got the success that we ended up getting, you know?
Larry's such a great horseman and do you think that's partially because he gallops a lot of his own?
Yeah, he does. And how can you believe that, right, Danny?
Yeah.
And it, yeah, he does. He get on his own horses, you know, and a man to be doing that and you know, train and work on his own horses and still has to gallop. I mean, you know, that's a hard worker. That man is there at, you know, 4:30 every morning and he don't leave no when the job gets done. He's just, that's how he is, you know. That's the type of man that he don't gallop one day. He gets sick because he don't gallop one day, you know. That's how much a horseman he is.
Do you think that helps when he's talking to you in the paddock? He can tell you more about the horse and what the horse likes because he gets on them himself?
You know what, this is, I got, you know, between me and Larry and the instructions, it was no more instructions between me and him.
No.
No.
Nothing.
No, still.
Really?
Still, he's just, he's not a type of trainer that's not a type of trainer that come and give you 100 instructions before a race. He just come and he just cake, right, smart.
That's it,
right, give me a leg of right, smart, you know. I'm not gonna confuse you. You know what you're gonna do out there, and that makes it a lot easier. That gives you the confidence just to get out there and do your thing. For my personality, yes, I love that about it. I mean, it's not like I think I'm the greatest, but you know, he gives you that confidence to just get out there and just ride comfortable, do your thing, and ride best. And I love that about him. And still, you know, now to these days, you know. And when he give you one instruction, you better follow it. You know, it's just, you know, it's this type of trend that he don't tell you much, but when he tell you, do what he says, you know. So
you guys make a great team. Mm-hmm. And actually, your very first, I'm looking right here, your very first Greatest Stakes victory was aboard Proud Spell.
Proud Spell.
In the Matron Stakes back in 2007.
Yeah.
And that had to be, did you know at that time what nice of a filly she was?
She was just coming along, you know. She won in New York, and I'm like, wow. And I remember Miss Cindy talking about the Breeders' Cup. After that, I'm like, Breeders' Cup. Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go, you know. I was like, yeah, and then she ran second that time. And it, yeah, and after that, she went on. She was, you know, she had a career that she had.
What was it like for you riding in the Breeders' Cup for the very first time and finishing second?
And finishing second. Yeah, it was, you know, another experience. Another thing accomplished, you know. It was awesome, you know. I remember coming out to a paddock and I like, Larry, what are these people doing in here today, man? Why is there so many people in here today? Is it because it's the Breeders' Cup, Kate? You know?
Hello.
You know, that's how innocent I was, you know, and get all our opportunities, you know, right back to back. It was amazing. Look, I'm kind of sweating right now thinking about it. You know, it was, you know, good old days.
Yeah. Did you prepare for the race any differently? Did you maybe really study the race, study the other horses, or did you, you know, think about the fact that large fields?
I do that the night before. I went to the program and see who was the competition, but it was like, you know, I was just going out there to ride my race and make sure I was going to win the race, you know. So we got second, but, you know, I steady every single horse. And then the night before, and when I was out there, I was just, you know, doing what I supposed to do, riding. And I was just drawn to, I was just going out there and letting them roll. You know, it was good. And we were used to do so good together back in those days, you know. Bro.
Did the race set up as you thought it would?
Yeah, it did. It did. Like I told you, she was sharp and she used to break right off the back and we land right close to the pace right off the back. And you know, the filly that beat me kind of drove on and I was just, you know, second best.
Who was that filly? I forgot.
To be honest with you, it was, no, I can't remember right now.
I'll look it up. We'll talk about it later.
We'll talk about it later. There you go.
obviously she was such a nice filly, but who would you say is the nicest horse you've ever sat on?
Kodiak Cowboy. I love that. I love him so much. He was so cool.
What was it about him?
His personality, you know. He was those type of horse that, you know, you get along with him so well. Like you talk to him and he pin his ears back and forth. He was like a pet. And fast too at the same time. You know, I used to love Corey Cowboy. It was nice, you know. Yeah, I wrote a lot of different nice ones here, but, you know, he was my favorite. Besides A Bells and Proxville, you know.
A Bells, Proudsville, Kodiak Cowboy. I mean, what names you have on your resume as far as horses you've ridden. And yeah, Kodiak Cowboy, also one of my favorites, just as a fan. Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's talk about A Bells for a second. What a nice, nice filly. What was she like?
You know, I didn't get to ride Abels as much. I only rode her like about three or four times. Remember, I broke his maiden in Delaware by 8. And then I won on her back again on the fairgrounds. I won with it again. And then, you know, he had Proxpel and Abels in the same time. So he kind of split the fillies up. He took Egg Bales to Arkansas and this Proxpel on the fairgrounds. So I remember Ramon Dominguez used to go to Oaklands and ride Egg Bales because supposedly they were going to run both in the Oaks. And it, so then they all decided going to the Derby. So by the time, you know, Ramon has a few mounts for different trainers. I think it was that or somebody else. I can't remember exactly who it was. So the Abel's mount comes out. It was open. So it was between me and Terry Thompson. Because Terry was riding for Larry in the town a little bit too. So I remember Larry told me that Hen and Rick bought it. They flip a coin and see who was going to ride the horse. And I ended up getting the mount, you know. And look, A Bells, look the history we got together.
I got to tell you, it's so funny. Last week, I had Terry Thompson on the show.
Oh, yeah?
And he told us that exact same story. He was sad. You were happy, obviously. And what was she like? Obviously, you know, it's such a sad ending to her career. But what was it like in the actual race, the Kentucky Derby, for you? Going out, hearing the crowds, hearing my old Kentucky home.
My old Kentucky home. You know, good old, and I mean, it's that emotion, that feeling that you get. You know, you walk out of that tunnel on Churchill Downs, and you hear all Kentucky home, and everybody's singing to it, and you know, it's just it's a inexplicable feeling, you know.
Describe the race.
The race, I mean, I'm glad I was, you know, laying in the position I was, you know, and then we hit the first turn, and I didn't where exactly where I want to be. I remember just kind of follow up the leaders. We hit the second turn, and I kind of got trapped for a minute. Mm. That's the way that split it a second, you know, to get out. So I sit in the net, and I see Big Brown kind of come around me. And right when he comes, when he came around me, I had the opportunity to get out. And he went on, and I went right behind him. And he drove off from me, drove away from me, and I'm just following him. And, you know, and I would ask the eight bells, and she went on. Big Brow went on. I went behind him. I could catch him. You know, he beat me. And they bailed, you know, second best of the race. And everybody, oh, they feel it got second. And I don't know how to sell this, but the moment I got up to stand them up, to stop her, I was like, whoa, something ain't right. Something ain't right. And then we hit the second turn, 7-8 ball. Next thing I know, she just collapsed. And I went over the top of her. And when I went over the top of it, I'm like, whoa. And I turned around, I kind of rolled the impact. You know, I was okay, thank God. And I went back and grabbed her. When I went to grab her, she just collapsed again. Mm. And, you know, it was...
Such a sad...
And I remember everybody came around and I was just... you know, when the stuff like that happened, just not really want to look at it. It made me so sad, you know. I was like, wow. So we went and put the saddle and stuff off, and I just kind of, you know, walk away a little bit and let, you know, the people that can help, you know, get into her. And, you know, just after that, I just kind of walk out a little bit and didn't do anything, you know.
Kind of a sad way to end your victory in the Kentucky Oaks that year. But, you know, she was just such an amazing filly, such a sad thing, such a freak thing. There was absolutely nothing, you know, anyone could have done to predict that or to stop that from happening. But just goes to show you the highs and the lows of this sport. Gabriel, it's a tough business.
I know it is.
But the highs are so rewarding and they're so worth it. What would you say to those listeners listening right now who are, you know, maybe they want to ride or they want to gallop? What's the most challenging thing about what you do?
Lots of motivation, you know, and be willing to do it, you know. It's just one thing that I tell you guys that, you know, when you get on top of that horse, just be free, you know. Let that energy carry you. You know, be relaxed, and that horse is going to feel that, and you will do a lot better. That's what I use. You know, just, you know, let that horse, oh, this guy is okay, you know. You know? So, I know it's hard to do. It's, you know, like you have your life in a line too. You know, because you go out there 40 miles an hour, you know, between horses, you know, you have to know what you're doing. You have to really know what you're doing, especially when there's, you know, 14, 12, 13, 14 horses feel, you know. It's.
Have you suffered any injuries throughout your career?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Oh, yeah, that's part of the game.
I think everyone has, yeah.
that's part of the game, you know. You know, broken collarbone, broken elbows. I had a horse step on my back, got my ankle dislocated. You know, we're still here, thank God, you know. And
do you ever, sitting there in a hospital bed, think about?
Not really.
Stopping, it, just you couldn't wait to get,
you know,
back, right?
It's just, I love riding so much that you know, that I don't think about it. Mm-hmm. I just don't think about it. I just, you know, can't wait to get better and get back again and do it. Like when the last injury that I have, it was September 28, 2013. I broke my elbow and I rushed it to ride it. I rushed it. I was off about 10, 12 weeks and I rushed that. And I shouldn't rush it. And I started riding like that. Then 2 weeks later, I went down again and broke my collarbone on the same year. So, you know, sometimes it's best to take your time. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's, and let it heal better. And, you know, recover yourself better, you know, and be back. It's not like it was hurting. But when I went down the second time, I went to protect my elbow. And when I went to protect my elbow, I landed on my collarbone. That's how I broke my collarbone. You know, I went down kind of the same way. So I went to cover my elbow, and then when I pounded, I landed on my collarbone. And next thing I know, I was like, oh.
So much for that.
Seriously, I got to do this all over again.
No, but we are notorious for rushing back from in. I know myself, I broke my collarbone. I was riding in a month, but that was stupid because I wasn't ready.
Yeah,
you know, you just, but you can't. You can't wait to get back to riding.
And, I know.
And that's when you know you love it, and that's, you know, what it takes.
I do love it, you know. And like I told you earlier, I'm just glad that I'm doing what I love in this country. And, you know, I like it a lot here.
So we've talked about the challenges and the highs and lows, but what advice would you give someone who was looking to be a rider?
What I told somebody that wanted to be a rider, you know, just, you know, you have to have the willing to be a great rider, because to be a great rider is just, you know, like I told you earlier, it's a hard work. I don't know if you understand your question, but it's just, you know, a lot of dedication, you know, work hard. It's one thing, you got to be fit. Mm-hmm. You got to be fit, you know. You just cannot jump out there and, oh, I'm fit. But you're going to, you know, horses, I weigh 1,500 pounds and you weigh 100. So you got 1,200 pounds different, you know, between them. And it, you know, work out a lot, you know, build some arms, build some legs, you know, be strong. Because, you know, when the horses say go, they want to go. And you guys have to be available to hold them together.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah.
Now that you're, you know, you're working horses every day, you're riding races every day, do you still go to the gym and work out, or do you run? What do you do?
Yeah, I still work out. I still work out here and there, you know. It's not like I do it every day, but, you know, because I don't have a weight problem. I mean, I just, you know, just like to eat, I guess.
Can't blame me there.
You know. Yeah, I don't have a weight problem. But I do like to, you know, run as soon as go out for a jog. I like to do a lot of hiking, you know, and just keep myself fit, you know. But, like, to lose weight and, you know, I don't work out for that. Just, you know, work out for maintain myself. Like, you know, I go to the box here and there, probably just because I like to go too. And so I don't really, like I said, I don't really have a weight problem.
Gabriel, this hour is flying by. We only have about 3 minutes left, believe it or not. But during the break, you were showing me pictures of your beautiful daughter. You have an older child as well.
Yeah.
Tell us about your family.
Yeah, I have two kids. The kids, Gabriel, he's 10 years old, and Madeline, he just turned out 14 months. And, you know, they're great kids, you know. And that's another thing, that I have a reason now to get up every morning and work for them, you know. And it's just, you know, I love my family. They are, you know. My wife, she has been pretty good to me. And she has helped me a lot through my career and my personal life. So, you know. Honey, you were right again.
What's your wife's name?
Adam Fletcher.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I ask every jockey on the show this question who has kids. What if one of your kids were to come up to you one day and say, "Hey, Dad, I want to be a jockey." What would you say?
You can't stop him.
Can't stop.
You know, I mean, kids, you know, they want to explore. They want to do what they do. You know, you cannot prevent the kid to, oh, you cannot do this. Oh, you cannot do that. I mean, you go try. You know, like I did to me. You won't be a jockey, go. You know, it's be careful. You know, I mean, kids are kids and, you know, they want to explore new things. And then, you know, you can be a...
Would you try to help them?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Definitely. It's just, you know, you gotta let them do what they want to do and, you know, and be supportive.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. You take your little one to the jocks room frequently. She might decide she wants to be a jockey one of these days. But tell us, Gabriel, you're currently riding at the Keeneland meet. So tell us what's next for you and what are you looking forward to, say, over the next year?
Well, the next year, right now, my main focus is the British Cup at Churchill Downs coming up. You know, that's one of the reasons I want to stay around the Kentucky Circuit again, just to work hard and see if I can find the right horse through. You know, maybe we can be back in the British Cup, maybe not win it, but, you know, be on it. You got to be in it to win it, you know?
That's what they say.
So if I get the opportunity to be back in there, you know, I would love to. I would love to, you know, ride that, you know, that's what I want to do again. You know, I mean, ride some big races, you know. I mean, that's where the fan at, that's what, you know, where the money at, that's where the good horses at, you know, that's where the, you know, the big people's at. That's, you know, I was there and I'd like to be back, you know, riding the stopper races, you know. And like I told you earlier, you know, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing, riding the way I've been doing it, and, you know, working the way I've been doing it. So I just got to, you know, keep working harder. And hopefully, you know, by the end of the year, I'll find the right horse. So we'll see what happens.
Any horses or babies we should keep an eye out for real quick? You don't have to tell us if you don't want to.
I keep that out of secret. We'll see what happens.
We'll keep that a secret, Gabriel. We're all out of time. But thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
No, Christina, thank you for the opportunity again, and I really appreciate you.
Folks, don't miss out on all of the other great shows here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, as well as the upcoming Derby coverage. So you can check out all that information on the website, www.horseracingradio.net. And don't forget to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Della Pina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.